Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
To the left-hand side for Vieira, who'll play it through to Gabriel Jesus, who's in here for Arsenal. Gabriel Jesus to finish it off. Oh, what a way to do it! Gabriel Jesus seals the points for Arsenal. He's back, and he's back with a bang.
Into the penalty area it goes. Gabriel header, and it's into the back of the net. Arsenal take an early lead through Gabriel.
Listening to the Chronicles of Aguna, the daily Arsenal podcast with me, Harry Simeon.
Hey everybody, how's it going? Welcome back to another episode of the Chronicles of Aguna podcast, part of the 90 Min Football family with me, Harry Simeon. Hope you're all good. Hope you're all well. On this episode, we preview the second leg of our UEFA Champions League quarterfinal with FC Bayern. We'll discuss the team who starts. We're also going to preview the game tactically, explain why we'll face a more aggressive, wounded and probably front-footed Bayern Munich this time around. We'll also share a prediction and we'll take plenty of your thoughts and questions from the live chat. Oh, starting to get nervous about this one, I have to say. And I wasn't feeling that nervous about this tie going into it, generally speaking. And then I arrived at the Emirates last Tuesday night and I wasn't working. So I wasn't thinking about any technical stuff. I wasn't thinking about having to be on air at certain points or do certain things. And that meant that I was just far more nervous than I generally am going into Arsenal games these days. And obviously, when what unfolded on the pitch in front of us gave me every reason to fear the possibility of us being eliminated now at this stage of the competition. And when you've come so far, you're desperate, aren't you, to take that next step? You're desperate to go to the next level. We're going to talk about this game in a lot of detail. We're also going to get some of your thoughts, some of your questions. And as I say, I kind of want to reflect a little bit on the aftermath of the Villa game as well, because I feel like there's been quite a bit of doom and gloom in the air, a lot of frustration. I think everybody's feeling a little bit down in the dumps. And I'm not saying that people don't have a valid reason to be feeling that way, but I think it's really, really important that we get back on track. And I think that for Arsenal to do that, they're going to need us behind them. They really do. And I have to say, I took issue with something that happened at the Emirates the other day. I don't want to be that person that goes, oh, this fan shouldn't have done this. Well, I don't want to be that person, but I really did take issue with some of the scenes that we saw at the Emirates Stadium at the end of the game against Aston Villa. And I feel like I need to get this off my chest. So we're going to do all of that on this episode of the Chronicles of Aguna podcast. Before I dive into the content, if you wouldn't mind leaving a like on the video, subscribing to the channel if you're brand new, it really, really does help. If you're listening on audio, please do leave us a review too. That is really, really helpful. But without further ado then, let's get into today's juicy subjects. Okay, let's begin by talking a little bit about the title race and where we're at the moment. Look, obviously, it's not in our hands anymore. Manchester City are leading the way. Manchester City are the side I think most people expect now to go on and win the Premier League title. They're a formidable side. They're a side that have become almost inevitable over the last few years. And one of the common things that we've heard from people throughout the course of this season is, you know, Arsenal bottled it last season, but they're really lucky this season because, again, Manchester City are not as good as they were before. Nonsense. Manchester City are on course to achieve more points this Premier League season than they did last time around. If they win all their remaining games, which everyone seems to tell me they will, then they'll amass more points than they did last season in the Premier League. So have Manchester City actually got worse? No. I think you can say that Arsenal have progressed this season, but also say that they're not quite there in terms of the Manchester City levels, and both of those things be true. Those two opinions can coexist. And I think we're in this space where it's kind of got to the point where people are maybe looking at it and going, well, it's black and white. Win the league, we've improved. Don't win the league, we haven't. And I don't think it is as simple as that. I don't think football is as simple as that. And I think there is, there is room for both of those opinions and both of those schools of thought. I said I took issue with something that happened at the Emirates Stadium at the end of the game the other day. And that was, for me, people starting to leave, you know, really early. Like, there were people leaving at 1-0 down. And we knew there was going to be a substantial amount of time added on to the end of the game. In the end, it was 8 minutes. This Arsenal side have given us so many thrills over the last couple of years. So many last gasp winners, so many last gasp equalizers, so many big moments, so many, you know, points where they've proven that they do have the character and the fight to keep going. And on this occasion, we fell short. But I think if I were a player in their shoes, I'd have been massively demoralized when I looked up, saw the amount of time added on, and saw half of the stadium had left. I think we've got a lot of criticism as a fan base from others in the sort of wider footballing world. You know, have been super critical of the decision of some of those supporters to do that. Look, people say, oh, you know, well, we had to get the train home, or we had to get this and we had to get that. And I get all of that, but you wouldn't have left had Arsenal been 1-0 up, and you wouldn't have left had it been 0-0. So, you know, it's, you didn't know that the game was done at 1-0 down. Nobody did, because Arsenal had plenty of time to still find that equaliser. Okay, we weren't playing well and it didn't look like it was coming, but there's no reason, in my opinion, for people, I'm not going to say for people, because there will be cases where you need to leave. And I understand that. And I don't want to paint everyone with the same brush. But there wasn't a need for as many people as that to be leaving the game before the final whistle. Now, say to me that I'm being critical of fellow fans. Tell me I'm being elitist, whatever, you know, or I'm not sitting here saying I'm a better fan than anybody else. I just don't like things like that. And I'm here to give my opinion, and that's what I'm going to do. I didn't like the fact that not just some, but so many Arsenal fans left at the point they did. It was incredibly frustrating, incredibly demoralizing. And it kind of made the whole situation after the Villa defeat seem a lot worse than it actually is. We're 2 points off the top with 6 games to go. Come on, where's the belief? Where's the confidence that we can at least put up a fight here? We might not go on and win the Premier League. We probably won't, in my opinion. I've been saying consistently, I don't think Arsenal are going to win the Premier League this season. But we played twice now before Manchester City take to the field in league competition again. And we have an opportunity to go 4 points clear of them. We have an opportunity to ramp up the pressure. And pressure is a thing. No matter how good you are, pressure is a thing. And if Manchester City respond to us putting 6 points on the board before they play again, and they come back and leapfrog us and take over top spot again and go on and win the title, fair play to them. But let's at least go down with a fight, if it is indeed what's going to happen to us. Let's make sure that we go out swinging. Come on. You know, you can finish second to City and it not be a disgrace, not by any stretch of the imagination. I understand the emotion and I understand the hurt, because I feel it too. Believe me, the end of last season sucked all of the life out of me. It was horrible, but we got to keep going. We've got to believe. You wouldn't expect the team to wave the white flag, yet a lot of our fan base seem to have done that. And I think, to use a Mikel Arteta phrase, that transmits across. It does, particularly in the stadium. You know, people would say, footballers will tell you, oh, you know, I don't pay much attention to social media. You think that they don't see what is posted on social media? You think that they don't get a feeling of what the general opinion and public consensus is? These are all lads 20-something years old. They are the social media generation. You know, they will be across that stuff, whether they'd like to admit it or not. And I just think we have a responsibility as supporters to be behind them, get behind them, support them, and be with them all the way. This fixture against Bayern coming up on Wednesday night is the type of fixture for me that, on the one hand, you look at it and you go, daunting, difficult. We're up against a side with far greater European pedigree, I beg your pardon, than ourselves. And you say, this is the last fixture that you want after you've just suffered a demoralizing defeat. But flip it around for a minute. Coming out on top in this game, and we don't even have to win it in 90 minutes, by the way. We don't even have to win it in 120 minutes. We could sneak through on penalties. Now, I don't know how it's going to go. I beg your pardon, got to the mute button before the sneeze. Look, I don't know how this is going to go. But if Arsenal could produce a positive result and get themselves through to the UEFA Champions League semi-finals, that could be the type of result that re-energizes a group that does look a little bit tired, that does look a little bit burnt out, that does look like it's struggling to get over the final few hurdles. The energy that you can generate from a victory over two legs against a side like Bayern, you know, would be massive. And I say a side like Bayern because Bayern, as I keep talking about, have that incredible European pedigree. Are Bayern the Bayern of years gone by? No, but they showed when they came to the Emirates on Tuesday night that they're still a very, very good side and should be taken seriously. I mentioned Bayern being wounded. They've just watched Bayer Leverkusen under Xabi Alonso in his first managerial role lift their first ever Bundesliga title. You think that won't hurt after an 11-year streak? Of course it will. Bayern will be up for this. The Allianz Arena will be up for this. But as Mikel Arteta said in his post-match interviews after the Villa game, if you want to be the best, if you want to compete at the very highest level, you are going to have moments like this. You are going to go through periods like this. And you have to be able to come out the other side. You have to. You have to stand up and be counted. And given what we've seen over the course of this entire season, forget what happened against Aston Villa. It was our first blip in 2024. We are good enough. We are good enough to achieve this. We are good enough to do it. And if we do, wow, what a boost that would be. And I don't want to preempt what's going to happen over the remainder of the season because that would be, you know, silly, given that we know what football's like. There are twists, there are going to be turns, lots of things can change, etc., etc. But if Arsenal did finish second, just behind Manchester City, and as long as we keep the pace as much as we possibly can between now and the end of the season, so we take it to the last couple of weeks, we keep hot on their heels. As long as we can do that, if we've made it to the Champions League semi-final too, that would be a remarkable step forward again for this team. And then you're talking about constant, consistent progress. Now, progress isn't always capped off in football with the trophies. And I understand that people will say, well, if you don't win the trophies, what's the point? But when Liverpool were finishing second to Manchester City year after year after year, as they have done, you know, three of the last 4 years, I never heard anyone at any point saying Jurgen Klopp's side bottled it. No, they just narrowly missed out. But they were competing, they were competitive. And as much as competing shouldn't be what you aspire for only, and there should be more that you hope for and more that you wish for, Arsenal competing is something that we haven't seen for over a decade, maybe longer than that. And we're here now, and we're fighting, and we as supporters have a duty to get behind the team, to support the group, to back them, not to leave stadiums early to get the tube before the one that you would have normally got. And the other ridiculous thing about leaving stupidly early, in my opinion as well, sorry, I'm on my soapbox now. The other stupid thing about that is that if everybody bloody leaves at that time, do you actually avoid any queues? No, you don't, because everybody's gone to the station at the same time. So yeah, anyway, we'll move on from that. We're going to talk Bayern in a bit more detail. I want to talk about what we can expect from Bayern this time, because I think there will be similarities to the game that they play under Thomas Tuchel this time around. But I also think there will be some differences as well, given they're at home and given that they would have, I think, taken some confidence, actually, from what happened at the Emirates Stadium on Tuesday night. We're going to do that right after the break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be gone just a second. You're listening to the Chronicles of Aguna podcast. Welcome back along to the show. Hope you're all good. Hope you're all well. Let's say a few hellos because there's loads of you in the live chat. Brilliant to see so many of you with me. I realize I've picked a much better time to go live today, lunchtime. Harry says, trust the process. The Masked Cannon makes a great point. He says, if we show them that we don't believe, they'll feed off it. Completely agree with that. I really do agree with that. Wandering Minstrel says, got to play without fear. You've got to play without fear, but you have to play and show a streetwise side as well. And I think that that is something that we've learned along our Champions League journey this time around. Everybody always talks about Mikel Arteta being a little bit wet behind the ears when it comes to this competition. And, you know, generally speaking, he's still a little bit wet behind the ears when you think about how short his managerial career has been so far. I think it's ridiculous that some people sort of hold him to such high standards. I think he's constantly progressed. He's constantly moved the team forward. He's developed as a manager. Will he fall short at times? Yeah, so will even the very, very best and elite managers in this sport who have been doing it for 30, 40 years would probably still fall short at certain points. It's just the nature of the game. And as a football manager, not everything is in your personal control. That's the other thing that people mistake. If a player switches off and lets a man get in behind him, is that the manager's fault? No, it's the player who lacked the concentration. If someone misplaces a pass, if someone fails to convert an opportunity, all of these things are on the players as well. And I hate this culture that we have in modern day football where we go, well, you know, they can't finish their chances, so it must be the manager. Or, you know, he can't stay switched on for 90 minutes, so it must be the manager. Like, we have to make sure that the responsibility is attributed fairly and to all of the relevant people rather than just the manager. But, you know, we are in a competition that we haven't been in for many, many years. And for a lot of these players, yeah, we've got your Jesus's and your Zinchenko's and your Jorginho's and your Havertz's who have been there, done it in this competition. A couple of them have won it. But this is still something new for us. And I think what we've learned, if you look at, for example, the game away at Lens, the games against FC Porto, is that gamesmanship comes into it more in Europe. You know, there are a lot of streetwise sides out there with experienced heads that might not be as physical as you, might not be as good as you on a technical level, but have experience of navigating these high pressure, high intensity games. And that can be really useful at this stage in the competition. So I agree with you that we need to play without fear, but we also need to make sure that we play with a little bit of restraint as well, because at the end of the day, we're going away from home. So I expect the approach to be different. Lots of you sort of mentioning Manchester City's running skills feels they'll drop points against Brighton. I don't want to get my hopes up about Brighton, because you never know what you're going to get from Brighton. One week they're great, one week they're terrible. Really, really difficult to know. David says, as an American, I'd give my left nut to be at the Emirates. If they score, scream louder, rally the team. Absolutely, absolutely. Lots of preach, Harry, preach stuff in the comments. Okay, let's talk a little bit about Bayern then. We'll come back to the comments a little bit later on. Stick with us, get involved in the chat, speak amongst yourselves, and I promise I'll dive back into it very, very shortly. But when I say that there will probably be some similarities with regards to the way that Bayern play and some differences, this is what I'm talking about. So first of all, I think Bayern will have seen that and will have worked out in the build-up to the first leg that Arsenal do quite like to play with a really high line. And against most opposition, they back themselves to be able to do that, to squeeze up the pitch, knowing that Gabriel and Saliba in particular have the capabilities of covering those spaces and patrolling those spaces to a really, really high level. Bayern figured out a way of getting into those spaces a lot more frequently than other sides do. And that's partly because they've got some really excellent players with great movement. I think Leroy Sané, had it not been for the injury problems that he had when he was here in the Premier League, could have gone on to be one of the Premier League greats. I really do think he's that talented. Serge Gnabry, we've all paid particularly close attention to his rise in Bayern Munich colours since leaving Arsenal. Fantastic footballer. Harry Kane, as much as it kills us to say it, and, you know, we've been able to say it most of the season, can't say it now because we're playing against him, for God's sake, again tomorrow night. But he is a really, really top striker. Give him a chance, he'll stick it away. Ask him to drop deep, he'll do that effectively. Ask him to pick out passes, he can do that. Ask him to try and drag people out of position with intelligent movement, he can do that. He can do all of those things. You are up against, pound for pound, one of the best front lines in European football. Regardless of what people say about Bayern this season, on paper, those guys, Sané, Gnabry and Kane, are up there among the very, very best. You move into the midfield. I thought Leon Goretzka was fantastic in that first leg. And when I watched it back, it became even more apparent to me how important he is and how good he is and how useful he is to this Bayern Munich side. Now add into the equation the fact that they're going to be at home, that the crowd are going to be right behind them. It's always a cracking atmosphere at the Allianz Arena. Those guys didn't get to come to the Emirates and witness the first leg because they were banned. They'll be even more up for it. And they will be wounded, not just the players, not just the manager, the fans too, because their 11-year streak has come to the end. Bayer Leverkusen, our Bundesliga champions. They knew it already going into the first leg. They knew it was coming. It was only a matter of time. But for Bayern, this really is all or nothing now. For Bayern, this is what their season depends on. Harry Kane got up and left Tottenham Hotspur to go and win trophies. Do you think he's not going to want to give it 100% and more to try and get his team through this tie? Of course he is. And it's not just about Harry Kane. It's about everybody. Bayern Munich are a top, top side with a top manager, with phenomenal players. They've lacked consistency at points this season and hence why they are where they are in the Bundesliga. But that does not mean that in a Champions League tie, they can't rise to the occasion. And so many of us were guilty of turning up to that first leg on Tuesday and going, yeah, you know what, Bayern, nowhere near as good as Bayer Leverkusen. We're sitting at the top of the Premier League. We should wipe the floor with these. We should make light work of Bayern Munich. Nah. Doesn't work like that. European football doesn't work like that. Porto were third in the Portuguese league at the time that we faced them in the UEFA Champions League, a league that I think we can all agree is significantly weaker than the Premier League. But look how tough they made it for us. Look how difficult they made it for us. We went all the way to penalties, and penalty shootouts, they're a lottery in a lot of ways. So make no mistake about it, we're up for a real challenge tomorrow night. But I going back to the point I made earlier, it's the type of fixture that, yeah, you can crumble under the pressure of, but it's also the type of fixture that could give you that shot in the arm that you need maybe to finish the season strongly if you can get the right result. We've got all the right players. My only concern, my biggest concern is that a lot of our key players look dead on their feet at the moment. I think that Declan Rice looks like he's blowing at the minute. You know, he's played for the majority of the season, barely missed a minute, always been there, always been available, always covered immense amounts of ground. He's just been phenomenal from day one. But over the last couple of games, I feel like he's just lost that half a yard of pace, probably due to fatigue. It doesn't help that Gareth Southgate picks him in all the bloody friendlies as well. You know, you look at the two centre-backs, again, you know, barely missed a minute. I'm not saying that they're as knackered as maybe Declan Rice is, but mentally, are they a little bit tired because they're making silly errors of judgment that we haven't seen from them all season so far? You look at the left-back position, that's a big problem position for us at this moment in time, more because we don't know who the best option is rather than it being, I beg your pardon, about not having options. Kivior played against Bayern, and I listened to Clive Palmer talk about this on the Arsenal Vision podcast, and I thought he nailed it. He said that Sane's job was to make Zinchenko play as a left back. Kivior. Sane's job that night was to make Kivior play as a left back. And we can all agree that Kivior's looked a lot better when, you know, he has been able to kind of tuck in a little bit, when he's been able to play closer to the centre halves. But you pin him in those wide areas and you put him in those one-on-one situations high up the pitch, which is what he needs to do in this Arsenal team.
Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? I'm Kat, founder of Ritual. We're making traceability the new standard for the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I couldn't find a multivitamin I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested, and clean label project certified. Oh, and our vitamin D3? It comes from sustainably harvested lichen from England, not sheep. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
He wants to squeeze the way that Mikel wants him to. It exposes him, and it did expose him, and he came off. Jorginho, who's been fantastic for most of the season, in my opinion, looked as though the game bypassed him against Bayern Munich, Has he been running out of steam a little bit as well? Is that why he was taken out of the side at the weekend? I think there are a lot of players that just aren't quite at 100% now. Now, people that have been there and done it, the managers that have been there and done it, the players that have been there and done it, will probably tell you that at this stage of the season, no one's at 100%. But you need to find that extra bit of something, because this is the business end. And that's what separates the good teams and the best teams. And I really do feel like we need to find that second win from somewhere. It's a shame that we had such a quick turnaround. Maybe we could have gone to Dubai after Villa before we travel to Munich, Munich via Dubai. I don't know. But yeah, that's my big concern. On a more positive front, I guess, Martin Odegaard did train with the side today. The full squad were out there. Everybody was involved in training, as was reported by my good friend Tom Canton earlier on, who's at London Colney today. That was good to see. That was great to see, because there was some concern. Mikel Arteta, I think, after the Villa game, said something along the lines of he felt something and that's why he came off. So to know that he's at least in contention, it doesn't mean that he's fit enough to start, by the way. We don't know what the results are going to be after that training session with regards to how he's feeling, what the sports scientists say, et cetera, et cetera. But to have Martin Odegaard training is a boost. And that brings me on nicely, I guess, to the team that I would pick for this game, because I think Mikel Arteta has some big decisions to make. I'm not really sure about the selection I've made. I'm doubting myself. I'm questioning myself. But that's why we're going to do it together with your help in the live chat. You can shoot me down. You can agree. You can disagree, whatever you want. But let's get into that right after this very, very short pause. You are listening to the Chronicles of Aguna Pod. Okay, let's talk lineups. I haven't got a fancy graphic today, which is really bad on my part. Do you know what? We can actually make one up now while we're doing it. That way we can run through it together. It just looks better, doesn't it? Hold on a second. Let me just move the players back into their positions. And I'll remove all the names to keep some, suspense with regards to who I'm going to pick where. Taking the graphic up on my other screen. That's why I'm looking away to my right. I'm not staring into space. I haven't lost the plot. Don't worry. One second. There we go. Okay. So I think the defense, at least most of the defense, picks itself. I would go with David Raya in goal, because he's been the goalkeeper all season, basically. And there's no reason to make a change in that position going into a game like this. White, Saliba, Gabriel make up three of the back four. There's no doubt about that in my mind. But the fourth player is the one that's up for debate. Personally, having watched Kivior defend against Sané in the first leg and having to be hooked. He was hooked that night, but he was hooked partly, in my opinion, because he was struggling, but partly because we needed what Zinchenko brought. And as much as, I've criticised some of Mikel Arteta's decisions recently, I think when you look at the impact that Zinchenko had and the fact that we were able to kind of regain a bit of control in the middle, create the chance from which we equalised and levelled the tie, you have to say that he got it right. But I just think, taking into consideration the fact that whoever we pick here is probably going to have to do a lot of running back towards his own goal, is going to have to be really strong in one-on-one defending, is going to have to be able to deal with balls potentially being dropped over the top by the likes of Bayern's midfielders, but maybe even Harry Kane when he drops into those pockets of space. I think the right option here is Takahiro Tomiyasu. He's been back fit for a while, hasn't played as much football as I'd have liked, a few substitute appearances here and there, but I think he's the one to play that role for me in Munich on Wednesday night. If we take it onto the midfield, this is really, really interesting as well. I think that there are two names that absolutely have to be on the team sheet. The first one is Declan Rice, and the second one is Martin Odegaard, providing he is fit. The third one, I mean, Mikel Arteta reverted back to the whole Kai Havertz from deep thing on Sunday. And the more I've thought about this, by the way, over the last few days, the more I don't think it was such a wild decision. Like, I know we didn't win the game and people will then point at that as a result of it. But I do think that in the first half, Kai Havertz's runs from deep were causing Aston Villa all sorts of problems. And if you remember the preview episode that we did on here on the Chronicles of Iguna, we talked about Villa's difficulties and struggles with picking up that type of run, that type of player. So I don't think it was a wild decision. I don't think it was a stupid decision. I think the mistake from Mikel Arteta in that game was to not react when Unai Emery obviously changed things up at halftime. And that allowed Villa to get the upper hand. And we never did anything proactive, in my opinion, to try and wrestle back the control of the game. I wouldn't play Kai Havertz in midfield in a game like this. In an ideal world, it would be Thomas Partey for me. In an ideal world, I'm putting Rice to the left of the three, and I'm bringing Thomas Partey into that deep midfield position. Has he been saving Thomas Partey for this game? Is that the reason that we haven't seen Thomas Partey that much yet? I don't know. Because I was looking at Thomas Partey for months and thinking, if you can get fit in time, if you can get fit in time, you will be key to the running. Yet he's back, he's fit, he's available, and he's playing a bit part again. Does that mean that his fitness is not there? Has Mikel Arteta lost faith in Thomas Partey? I don't know, because in an ideal world, my midfield would probably look like this. Partey in the middle with Rice and Odegaard either side of him. But that's not what I suspect Mikel Arteta is going to do. I suspect he's probably going to go with Jorginho. However, if Partey is even 80% fit, I'm going with Partey, because watching Jorginho in that first leg, the game bypassed him. Now, it might be a case of having to drop Declan Rice a little bit deeper than he would normally play when he's operating in that left eight role to protect Partey, a bit like the way he protects Jorginho at times, in order to give Partey a hand in there. But you are away from home here, guys, against Bayern Munich, the mighty Bayern Munich. You have to be a little bit conservative, in my opinion. And if you're talking about ball progression, which without Zinchenko in the side, who I don't want to see in the starting 11, by the way, without Zinchenko, there's very little ball progression, in my opinion, from these deep areas. There's very little of that from our back four. So bringing Partey in, and I know Jorginho can give you that too, but bringing Partey in gives you a bit more steel, a bit more physical presence, but also his progressive passing is second to none. It's so good. It really, really is. The way he receives the ball in the And the way he picks people out. It's fantastic. So in an ideal world, that's what I'd go with. But if there are any question marks around Partey's fitness, then it has to be Jorginho. Not as the six, though, for me. It has to be Jorginho in the role that he played against Liverpool, which was to the left of Declan Rice, with Declan Rice taking on the majority of the defensive work there. But yeah, ideally, that's my midfield trio. Partey at the base, Rice to the left, Odegaard to the right. In attack, I'm going to go Kai Havertz up front. I know a lot of people were making the case for Jesus to play in Munich because of his Champions League pedigree and because of how much of an impact he had when he came on in that game. He was dire at the weekend, I thought. He was slow. He was off the pace. He had a few moments where, you know, he was intelligent in his play. And we know that Gabriel Jesus has got that. But he didn't give us a focal point. He didn't give us an outlet at any point. And yeah, I wasn't impressed by that performance. However, I do take on board the point of experienced in the Champions League and all of that. And he's been performing really well in the competition. He's in with a shout. And that's why I would play Gabriel Jesus from the left-hand side. If you're playing Takahiro Tomiyasu at left back, he's not going to be making those advanced runs as much as other fullbacks would, because he is very much a defender, Takahiro Tomiyasu. Plus, he'd be playing on his weaker side and he'd be tasked with dealing with Leroy Sané probably. So for me, if Tomiyasu is the one at left back, I think you can get away with Jesus on the left flank. I kind of do want Jesus in the team for this game, but I don't want him as the centre forward, if that makes sense. My other selection would obviously be on the right-hand side, Bukayo Saka. Now, I can imagine people are screaming back at their headphones now saying, what about Gabriel Martinelli? What about Leandro Trossard? Look, I think Martinelli would be my choice out of those two in a game like this, because he is someone that will give you the running power, the ability to get up the pitch, the ability to kind of take you out of deep areas by carrying the ball. And obviously the width that he gives you makes it really, really difficult to defend against. But I just feel like he's been off it lately. And Leandro Trossard, very much for me right now, falls into the category of super sub. And each and every time I've seen him start a game recently, I've looked at him and I've been a bit underwhelmed, I have to say. So it's not been easy to come to this 11, by the way. There are a few big decisions. The left wing is a big decision. The centre forward one is a big decision, I think, given how many people want to see Jesus start in this game. Partey coming into the midfield would be ideal, but I have my doubts around how feasible that is, given Arteta, who absolutely adored this player, has been really reluctant to throw him back into the mix. Tomiyasu comes in at left back for me. So to run it through for you, my starting 11 to face Bayern Munich, just about, is David Raya in goal, White, Saliba, Gabriel and Tomiyasu across the back. Partey, Rice and Odegaard in midfield with Jesus, Havertz and Saka in attack. Let me know your thoughts. Let me know your questions. We're going to take those right after the break and we'll finish off the show with a little prediction. Get your questions in. Back in a mo. Okay, let's have a look at what the live chat is saying. My favourite part of the show, this. Lots of you saying that you want Partey in. Partey as a lone six, Rice as the eight. Partey next to Declan. Gunner says, we played well in the first half. Easy to forget because of how bad the second half was. You're talking about the Villa game. Yeah, definitely. Andy Jackson says he wouldn't play Havertz full stop. I think Havertz has been one of our better players over the last few months. And I don't think he was particularly bad at the weekend, despite playing out of position again. Mikel Arteta did say in the build-up that, no, you know, Kai Havertz isn't more comfortable playing at centre-forward. He's comfortable anywhere. He obviously knew at that point that he was going to play him in the midfield. And so he couldn't say, well, yeah, he's much better at centre-forward and then pick him in the midfield, could he? MM says Partey's only played 369 minutes. Yep. You're absolutely right. But if you can't get him ready for this game, having been back in the frame, back in the picture for as long as he has, then what's the bloody point? You might as well just let him go from now. David says, time to gamble. Play Partey. It's Partey time. We will be pushed back. Jason says, Arteta's clearly lost faith in Partey. Arteta has been happy to play other players, whether fit or not. Oops, could be some validity to that point. Big hello to Ray Beam, to Hacker, to Adam, to John, everyone else that's involved. John says, anyone else think that Arteta moved players about like Havertz, Zinchenko, White and Odegaard so the Munich scouts wouldn't have an idea what 11 we were starting with? I don't think he would have sacrificed anything in the Premier League to try and confuse the scouts of Bayern Munich, but Mikel Arteta is someone that likes to keep people guessing. So, yeah, maybe, I'm not going to say maybe, I'm going to say for sure he has done everything he can to try and throw them off the scent. But it's not always easy to do that, given how much information is available to everybody nowadays. Ray Beam says, talking about my team, which I'll just bring back on the screen to remind you. He says, I won't if I don't press the right button. He says that my team, the team that I've picked, has no pace in it. I mean, the only way you can inject a bit more pace in that, I would say, is if you put Gabriel Martinelli on the left instead of Gabriel Jesus. And I'm not really fussed which one of those two plays, because I don't think there's much in terms of their current form and stuff. I take that point on board. But if you put Leandro Trossard in, it doesn't exactly add blistering pace. I'm not saying he's slow, but Martinelli's the pace merchant, if you like. He's the one that really moves the needle in that department for Arsenal. Okay, let's see what else we've got. Ray Beam, also on the subject of Kai Havertz, says that he was clean through three times and didn't come close to scoring. Not great in my book. Yeah, but this is the thing, right? We look at players and we always focus on what they don't do and what they don't bring. And we rarely give them the flowers for what they actually do bring to the table. How many other players get in behind as much as Kai Havertz? Not many. You know why? Because his movement is intelligent. It's timed to perfection. The movement is incredible. Nobody, when we spent that money on Kai Havertz, sat here and said that he was going to come in and be the goal machine. He's contributed a fair amount of goals this season. It's not had a bad season on that front by any stretch of the imagination. There are players that you would say have a better goal scoring pedigree than him that haven't hit those numbers this season. To say he was clean through, I think, is a little bit harsh. I can remember him having a shot from a sort of wide left position that Martinez beat away. Other than that, he was facilitating other people. I just think that Kai Havertz is the one that people love to pick on. And to be quite frank, mate, and I'm not digging this at you, but to be quite frank with you, I'm bored of it. The guy is a part of this squad. He's been a very important, vital part of this squad. And if you haven't seen that over the last few months, you ain't been watching Arsenal. You've been watching something completely different. If you do not appreciate or understand the value that Kai Havertz brings to this squad, now that doesn't mean he's perfect, but if you don't understand the value that he brings, then you've not been watching this Arsenal team in 2024. You've been watching something else, or you've been watching Match of the Day only, or those 3-minute highlights clips on YouTube that Sky put out, because you definitely haven't been watching him properly if you don't think he's contributed in some way, shape, or form. Sam Nichols says, Hi, Harry. Why do you think there was so much criticism over Arteta's team selection against Villa, considering how well the team played in the first half and the second half was the issue? Exactly the point I made earlier, mate. You're absolutely spot on. I think it's very easy after an event to come back and say, well, you know, he should have done this and he should have done that. The first half performance was very good, but we didn't stick the ball in the back of the net and we didn't take advantage of the opportunities that we created. And we were made to pay for that, in my opinion, not because Mikel Arteta got the starting 11 horribly wrong, but because he didn't react quickly enough, in my view, to the changes and the tweaks that Unai Emery made in order to ensure that his side started to get more of a foothold in the game. They had that Watkins moment in the first half, and everybody keeps going on about that. Oh, Watkins hit the post and it spun across the goal. Yeah, but other than that, Villa created absolutely nothing. So we were the dominant party in that game up until halftime when Unai Emery made those tweaks. And where I do criticise Mikel is not for the initial team selection. It's that perhaps, and again, it's easy to say with hindsight, and it's easy to say from my desk here in front of my microphone, rather than being the one in the dugout with all the pressure, it's very easy to say, I don't think he reacted quick enough. But that's kind of how I came away feeling. Okay, what else have we got? AJ Envoy says, do you have doubts on whether certain players like Saka, Saliba, Odegaard, Rice and others will stay at Arsenal if we don't win any trophies this season and even next season? At the moment, I'm not worried about that. I'm not concerned about that at this stage. We're not at the point where, you know, we're one of those clubs that have been going for years and years and years and there's no sign of us winning anything. This is the second year we've been in contention and we're still in contention. So, you know, I'm not saying that it's going to happen, but we could still win the Premier League and the Champions League this season. So I don't think at this stage in the season, your Sakas, your Salibas, your Odegaards, your Rices are even considering that right now. And I don't think that any of them are A, old enough to start to be worrying about that, to get the Harry Kanes about them, if you like, where he's got to a point in his career where he looked at it and he goes, I can't win anything at Spurs. I need to move on. But I don't think anyone's at that point yet. And I think the club continue to show ambition. And as long as there is progress, I feel like these guys will buy in. And also what we've done a great job of, guys, which we never did a good job of in the past, we've protected ourselves against this. We've protected ourselves against the risk of teams coming in, turning heads, those guys kicking up a stink and us having to sell cheap. If we have to sell them, let's say, for example, I know it wouldn't happen, but let's say Bukayo Saka woke up on Thursday morning, if we were knocked out of the Champions League and said, I want to transfer. Okay. It'll be heartbreaking. It'll be gutting. We'd be losing a great player, but we've put ourselves in a position where we wouldn't sell him on the cheap and we wouldn't be forced into letting him go in the way that we were forced to let Van Persie or Nasri or Fabregas in the past go for amounts of money that just weren't anywhere near what their value was. We're not in that position anymore. We're in a position now where we would be able to demand the absolute maximum. And then who's to say you can't go out and find a player of high quality with that kind of money in the coffers? I'm not stressed about this right now is the point I'm trying to make. I think we've done a good job of protecting ourselves where we can financially. You can never protect yourself against the player just waking up and saying, I want to go, and the problems that come with that. But we're in a good position. And I don't think this project is at a point where it's coming to the end And so people are looking at it and going, I might need to jump ship. Look, we're going to win a big trophy with these players and with this manager. I'm convinced of that. I'm convinced of that. It will happen. When? I don't know. How exactly? I don't know. But I really do believe in this group and in this team and in this project. And some people say, well, it's blind faith. You know, you never say anything bad about them because you believe. No, it doesn't mean I'll never say anything bad about them. It doesn't mean I'll never criticize them. What it means is I'll have to really believe something for me to be able to. I'll have to really believe that something is wrong for me to say it. So anything I do tell you I think is wrong is because I really believe it. I'm not doing it for effect. And I wouldn't want to do it for effect because I love this team and I love the way we're going. Palash says this project can go the Poch Spurs way very easily. So can any project. So can any project. You know, this. The other thing here is that you've got to think about the landscape as well. And people never do this. And it drives me mad. Do you realize who we're up against? Do you realize who is cleaning up in the Premier League? Do you realize who is winning the Premier League year after year after year? Do you realize who are on course to maybe even win a second consecutive treble and who are on course to win their fourth Premier League title in a row? Do you know who we're talking about? We're talking about state-owned Manchester City with 115 financial charges against them. It is alleged that they've broken the rules. I don't know that they have, so I'm not going to say that they're guilty. But when you think about the fact that they've got the best infrastructure, the best manager probably in history, a group of players that they've been able to bring together over the course of a number of years, way longer than the time that Mikel Arteta has been at Arsenal, and there are question marks about how they got there, should we really be beating Arsenal up for narrowly missing out to them? I don't think we should. I'm not saying you should settle for being second all the time. Of course, you should aspire to win and aspire to achieve the maximum. But to ignore that context, to me, makes no sense. So, yeah. Anyway. Guys, I'm going to leave it there. Thank you all so much for joining me. I really, really do appreciate it. Great numbers on the live today. Amazing. I will see you all very, very soon. We'll be back definitely after the buy-in game, possibly tomorrow, depending on what's out there, what's worth talking about. But definitely after the buy-in game. And fingers crossed we can get that victory that I keep saying could be the shot in the arm that Arsenal really need at the end of this difficult season. I'll catch you all on the next one. I keep mincing my words. All the best, guys. Goodbye.